following episode of Let's Eat In has been brought to you by Cabot Cheese. Cabot Cheese, a Vermont dairy farm family, owned since 1919 and proud to be voted your four-time champion cheddar. Five generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont. On the web at cabotcheese.com.
All right, you're listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. We are at Roberta's Pizza on this lovely, unseasonably warm Monday in Brooklyn. I'm your host, Kathy Irwin, as usual, and I've also got a couple of guests here in the station right now. Let's talk about beer a little bit. We've got Todd Ahlstrom, who founded Beer Advocate how many years ago?
Wow, back in 1996.
All right, 96, with your brother, Jason.
That's right.
And wife, Candace.
Yep.
Let me move this mic a little closer to your mouth. Okay. So Shane Welsh is here again. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Okay, so he's the founder of Six Point Craft Ales here in, Six Point Brewery here in, right here in Brooklyn. And he's been on the show a couple times already. I want to talk a little bit about how, back in 96, these are like the real pioneering days of creating, you know, the word blog was few and far between, or the concept of it was really just getting started out. And yeah. It's not a blog.
No, it's not.
But, I mean, I'm just trying to paint the landscape right now. Yeah. And you had a user-generated forum, basically, how it started out. Thanks. So, was that the original intention? Just to, like, what was the original intention? Because I know it still is very much, a way to share ideas, information, ratings.
Yeah, reviews. I'll try to give you the sort of condensed version.
Okay.
Basically, in '96, my brother and I had been homebrewing for a while, and I had just returned not too long ago from the military. I was over in England. Jason would come out and visit us, and we kind of explored a lot of the real ales they had over there to offer. And when I came back, I started getting in the tech world and worked for a company out in Western Massachusetts building websites. Finally got a job in Boston and moved next to my brother. We started homebrewing every week. And we're like, you know, we should start taking notes on our homebrews. And we started writing down what we tasted, you know, what we could do better and whatnot. And then we're like, you know, we're trying all these great beers right now. Back in 96, there was a ton of craft beers exploding all around the U.S. And we're like, we should start taking notes in that too. And, you know, I could build a website and we could just start tracking what we're tasting. And then eventually people started coming to the website and reading our reviews and going, you know, we'd like to talk about beer too. So we introduced a forum. And then they were like, we'd like to review them as well. So we added that. And organically over the years, it just started growing and getting more and more users and features and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. So it really has evolved kind of organically.
Oh,
and
big time.
What is the most surprising result of where, so back in 96, what would you be so surprised that happened due to this?
Well, essentially went from a hobby and we're surprised that my brother and I are now full time. You know, it's our actual job now.
Yeah,
it's a pretty
making
good job.
Beer, you're like, okay, that pays itself off. Yeah. I know I don't have to buy it.
We could talk about beer. That's our job. And spread, you know, we spread the good word about good beer. We try to promote the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm. So, because Beer Advocate is now a magazine in print.
Yeah, that's right. We went sort of the reverse. Traditionally, print went web. We went web to print. And what was interesting about that, you know, we're going to be coming up. We're the only monthly beer magazine, too, that we know of in the U.S. We're approaching number 50 soon, in a few months here.
It's fascinating. At a time when print is, magazines are falling, dropping like leaves, Beer Advocate, because of that unique niche that nobody else has really done. Do you see it's continuing on? Because it seems like it's going really strong.
I do. Yeah. I see it evolving too. We're getting more and more users. who would love to see it on their iPhone or iPad and whatnot. And we'll eventually get there. We're in no rush, though, but we'll get there eventually.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And festivals. That has started how early into the life of Beer Advocate?
I believe we threw our first fest in 2003. It was called the Art of Beer Fest.
I like that name.
Yeah.
So do you have annual Extreme Beer Fest?
Yep, we do an Extreme Beer Fest in the winter.
And that seems like it's the biggest card, right?
That was the first fest for us that sold out like months in advance.
Wow.
It was our third fest ever. And we're like, yeah, it's a keeper.
What is Extreme Beer?
Extreme Beer, yeah, that's interesting. You'll get different answers from everyone. And unfortunately, a lot of the sort of mainstream media has kind of pigeonholed Extreme Beer as being high alcohol, you know, over hopped beer. But for us, Extreme Beer is basically something that's been around forever. It's just, it's the brewer's creativity. Extreme Beer is about brewing beer that pushes the boundaries of you know, brewing in general, and also the minds and the palates of consumers.
All right. So creative beer.
Yeah, creative beer. Exotic ingredients. Different, you know, bringing back old methods of brewing from, you know, ages and ages ago.
Is there anything about the festival itself that's extreme? Is it an extreme beer festival?
Like, yeah, I mean, well,
it's extremely crowded.
That's what I was thinking.
No, we get it's just nice that we get a platform to pull all this creativity together. Whereas a lot of times, you know, a consumer might have a hard time finding them in the market, you know, although it's getting much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But we bring them all together. So we'll have like 125 beers usually on the Saturday. And then the Friday is a special sort of VIP Night of the Barrels where we feature beers aged in wood.
Right on. What is the most extreme beer you've tasted? Or maybe made?
I don't do a lot of brewing anymore, so I can't recall that.
Okay.
But as far as the most extreme that I've had?
Shane, feel free to chime in.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm going through my library in my head right now. Hold on.
There have been some outrageous hot pepper beers that have been made that you could just call them extreme because it is so difficult to just consume more than 1 or 2 ounces of the beer. It's like drinking liquid fire.
Well, it was Ithaca Beer Company.
Well, yeah.
It tastes like burning.
they made a beer called Tastes Like Burning where it was
burning
beer.
Down the house? No.
No, what they did is they aged a beer in a Tabasco barrel.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it was just...
That's clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, though, that 1 ounce was punishment.
Uh-huh.
And it's great to introduce yourself to that flavor because actually the malt kind of helped.
Well, there's this whole like
that, but,
kind of,
but it's not, it wasn't quaffable.
Right. Well, isn't there also this like macho like niche of extreme hot sauce eaters? Like
they
go around and they just try to eat as much hot sauce as they can. And it's like a competition. It's like a sport.
Well, they have this in the brewing industry too, but for hops.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to punish yourself with spice, they punish themselves with bitterness.
Yeah.
But what the studies have shown is that there's a threshold, just like you can measure and quantify the spice of a pepper,
mm-hmm.
you can quantify the bitterness of a hop through this measurement unit called a bittering unit.
IBUs.
Or an international bittering unit, but now it's mostly known as just a BU. And once it goes over a certain number, the human palate can't distinguish any additional bittering flavor. Like, it just shuts down.
And that's, what, around 70 or so?
Yeah.
Give or take?
Yeah. So there's breweries now that are brewing, like, 120 or 150 IBU beers, but you can't really say that the 150 IBU beer is hoppier than the 120.
No. I mean, like the German hop growers we met once on a field trip to Germany said, anything over that 70 is just a waste of hops.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's the IBU on a Bengali Tiger IPA?
About 65.
Okay. It's getting close.
Pushing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But people like hops. That's a trend
they
that
sure
I see.
Do. Yeah. Hop heads.
Hop heads.
Yep.
That's
name?
That's
the term. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a definitely, I mean, it's always been used in beer, right? No. I mean, not always, but.
No, not always.
It's
actually,
been around,
in the history
basically.
Of beer, hop usage is probably somewhat, you know,
relatively speaking, modern times?
Modern, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's been around for hundreds of years, but...
But there was a period, you know, like in America, there was a dearth of flavorful beers until this craft beer revolution, right? And that was, it was really a hop flavor that made a big difference, I think, right?
Well, it depends on how far back you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone and through so many different waves.
I'm just talking about those days when we were, like, you know, drinking PBRs at, you know, parties, and now we're all drinking.
That was last night.
Yeah.
The average idiot, you know,
right,
now drinks, like, you know, IPA because it's, I don't know, hoppy.
Right. No, I don't think that's why they're drinking it. I think it's because it has more flavor. I think it's because when you finally get introduced to that flavor and it's integrated into the beer in the right way, it can be really nice.
And it goes beyond just beer. I mean, Americans' palates, they're going towards bigger, bolder. They want flavor,
right?
Whether it's food, coffee.
That's funny because beer. Americans have no, generally on palate basis, they have no problem with sweet foods, no problem with salty foods.
I wouldn't call it no problem. They love sweet
and salty.
Okay,
and salty, but bitter is part of a flavor component has been shunned for a long time, and bitterness can be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the hop is really one of the most bitter compounds on earth. You know, just a small, if you were to chew on just a single hop cone or the resin from the hop cone that you used to put in the beer, it is the bitterness is so intense it lingers in your mouth for so long, and it's incredible.
Now, there are so many other things that are bitter. How come we don't put broccoli rabe in beer, or, you know, arugula or something? Why is it always hops if we're going for that bitter flavor?
Part of what I was just saying is the concentration of the bitterness in hops is so intense that when you, like, for instance, when at Six Point it's a 500-gallon batch of beer, which is big for a home brewer but small for a commercial brewer, that's 500 gallons of malt syrup. Like, you'd have to just think about how much bitterness you need to offset all that sweetness and sugar. So the most efficient mechanism for that is the hop cone, because a single hop cone is
incredibly
intensely bitter.
Cool.
You know, you could use broccoli rabe too, but then you start thinking about what other compounds are going to contribute to that beer besides just the bitterness.
Yeah. What kind of chemical?
Well, yeah, no.
After the chemical reactions that take place, what other, profiles are you going to get from it?
It would be terrible, right. But I just find
terrible.
It interesting that there's got to be other things like hops. Like, I don't know, tea leaves are pretty bitter.
No, there's
not as efficient.
No,
maybe.
Because what I mean, if you want to turn it into more science discussion, there's a resin in the hops that you isomerize during the boiling process. So when you add heat energy to it, it changes its chemical structure, and then it becomes water soluble. When that happens, it causes the proteins that are dissolved in the barley solution called wort to precipitate. And when they precipitate, it changes the entire composition of beer.
All right.
And it also, they're antimicrobial. They're natural preservative.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm.
And also, here's the other thing that they have that, you know, broccoli rabe and rosemary and other things don't, is that there's an entire spectrum of basically nuances through the aroma, through their essential oils. So to give you an idea of how localized it is, the Yakima Valley in the United States is known for producing hops that have a very citrusy, piney, and resiny aroma. The Hallertauer region and Tettnanger region in Germany produces spicy and peppery and floral. And there's areas in Bohemia and in Central Czech Republic that produce hops that are grassy.
So there's a huge variety of hops themselves, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for this Hops for Dummies little intro. I want to get back to that and more about Todd's, you know, the future of Beer Advocate and all the fun stuff that you guys, I know you have cooking up. So we picked a little song for you. Be right back.
Just you wait. The New England and New York farm families who own Cabot Cooperative are offering listeners a chance to win some of the world's best cheddar simply by calling in 718-497-2128 or emailing us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. What a great way to start the holidays. We'll be picking a winner for the program 2 weeks from now. Cabot Creamery is a proud supporter of what Heritage Radio is all about.
The shepherd will tend his sheep. Another valley's gonna bloom again. And Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. Well,
Bubbles, you sure you don't want to join us?
Sure.
I want to talk. Okay. Hello. I hope nobody heard that. Okay, well, that's little murmurs. I'm your host, Kathy Irwin, and this is Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. And today we're talking to Todd Alstrom and Shane Welsh. Todd's the founder of Beer Advocate. Shane makes beer at Six Point Craft Ales. I also wanted to change the subject a little bit and talk more about, this is a show about food normally, although beer is food, I guess.
It sure
you could
is.
Live off of it. No? You might get a little scurvy, right?
Oh. We could try it sometime, but beer is food.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And are you much of? I know that I've heard about your beef stroganoff nights, but do you enjoy cooking as much as you?
I don't enjoy it as much as I should. We don't do it enough, unfortunately. But it's something we always say we're going to do more of, and hopefully we will.
Maybe when things aren't so crazy right now, because I know that you have a lot of projects coming up.
Yeah, there always seems to be another festival coming up or another issue of the magazine. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying there's a lot going on.
Sure. Are you the editor, too, of the magazine? Or?
Yeah. You know? Well, my brother and I act as like we're not like trained editors, but we kind of pick and choose the content, work with our freelancers, kind of give everything a once-over. But we do have a whole group of people that we outsource for the copy editing. Because my brother and I are still the only official employees.
Wow.
My wife Candace works for us too, but she handles the festivals, pretty much runs them day off. But for the most part, we're a two-person company still.
Wow, that's incredible. And your festivals have always been in Boston, right?
Correct.
Any plans to bring them outside?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's something to look forward to.
Maybe Brooklyn? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the future has.
Because I think that, Boston's a great city and all, but hey, spread the love if you can. So
we'll do our best.
All right. Yeah. So I usually ask folks on this show, what is your favorite meal for a date? Like, what would be your ultimate date meal? But I wanted to ask you, what is the best date beer? Like, so you go to, like, a cool beer bar and you want to impress your date. I know you're married, but just let's,
Yeah, you want to impress with a beer.
Yeah.
Well, what you could do, it's pretty hard to get, but there is a beer called the Deus from Belgium, and it's brewed exactly like champagne in many ways. It goes through all the proper degorgement and all that, and the brewery actually has a nice presentation. They have crystal glassware all etched. I might choose something like that. Probably goes for about 40 to 50 at a bar.
And so it's a bottle. It's bubbly. Whoa, nice.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's very effervescent, very like tight carbonation, like
so
champagne.
So it's really the champagne of beers, Miller High Life.
Yeah, well, it's a beer to champagne. And it's got these wonderful notes of like lavender and lilac.
Oh, that sounds awesome. How come I haven't tried that, Shane?
Yeah, get on that, Mr.
Well, Date you got
guy.
The popping off.
Let's talk about, that one later. okay, so, and food. What would be the ultimate food? Something you like to make or would like to have in front of you?
Well, based off of what we had this weekend, I think sushi is great.
Yeah.
It's fun. The place we went to, what was it called again this weekend?
Where did we go?
Sushi Hasuda.
That place was amazing.
We got the sour treatment there. That was awesome.
I think in general, raw whole foods. Well,
it's so sensual. Yeah. I mean, sushi.
Especially the fillets of fish, raw.
It's simple, but very good for you.
So tender.
But it's also fun.
So succulent.
No, there's a lot of people that say that there's something extremely sexual about sushi. And
The
sea urchin too.
Ah, the sea urchin is nature's Viagra.
Oh, we had some oyster sushi too. A little aphrodisiac there for you.
Yeah. You kind of can't go wrong with sushi, unless your date doesn't like sushi. But I feel like we've passed that place. I mean, I know in a, you know, a short few decades ago, sushi was like scary, you know, raw fish, and there's a lot of qualms about that. But I don't know anyone who doesn't eat sushi. It's like,
yeah, I don't know anyone either.
Yeah. All right, so that's a good one. And what's something that you would like to make, though, like if you're cooking?
Something I like to make. Damn me for not cooking enough.
Okay, sorry.
I make a good beef stroganoff, though.
Yeah? Do you put any beer in it ever?
Sometimes.
Yeah. That sounds like a good one to drop in there.
My wife Candace doesn't like me putting beer in the food.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. So I just don't tell her.
Cooking with beer is something, I don't know, it seems like natural. Have you ever had thoughts about, do you ever, at beer festivals, there's usually food involved, right? And I've been to the Belgian Beer Fest last weekend, and there's like pretzels, and I know that I forget who was catering it, but they had one dish that was mussels cooked in a nice like Belgian beer.
Yeah,
that was
really cool. Mark Kadish from the Sunset Grill, he does the food for most of our festivals, and he does... add some beer to the dishes, and actually at his restaurant too. But cooking with beer is really big right now. Just the flavors, you know, beer and food is just a natural pairing, regardless of the food.
I hear a lot of people replacing things with wine. So mussels are usually cooked with wine or white wine, and then in this case, swap in some Belgian beer, and it's a unique little twist.
Or nice, you know, one of my favorite mussel dishes is cooked with a. It's a Schlenkele. It's a German rauch beer, a smoke beer. The malts are actually smoked over wood fire.
Oh, that's a good thought.
And you put a little, you know, little bacon in there with some corn.
Or not even. You could use a smoked beer, and you'd have that smoky flavor in your chili or whatever.
Yep, you could do that too.
Skip the bacon.
We actually feature. His name is He's called the homebrew chef Sean Z. Paxton in California. Mm-hmm. He actually writes a monthly column for us in the magazine called Cuisine.
Cuisine of beer?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So about six recipes every month.
Nice. All right. So cooking with beer. I mean, maybe you should have a festival based around that. I'd go to that. Not that I wouldn't go to the other one, so.
That's a good idea.
Okay. What is the, your favorite beer festival experience?
Outside of our own? Because I do.
It
although,
could be your own. Yeah.
No, I like our festivals. We don't get to enjoy them as much as the attendees.
Oh, I see. Because you're running around with chicken with your
Yeah, but that's the point. We're throwing these for the people who are showing up. Mm-hmm. It's about them and the brewers. But I do. I get a lot of enjoyment out of that, watching everyone enjoying what we've put together.
Now, speaking of that, because I'm curious, because that was my first beer festival, going to your Belgian Beer Fest, and I'm curious about the points of the night where people just all start shouting like, and then they, what is it?
I don't know. You get pockets of people every once in a while that'll, you know, rise up and they hope other people will follow.
What do they do? They like flail their hands in the air and then the whole room suddenly just stops for a minute to scream. And then
you'll see that at the Great American Beer Festival.
Great American Beer
Festival. There's 40
plastic cups. They'll drop them on the
ground. So it's like doing the wave, but not.
Yeah, they'll drop their plastic cup on the ground. Everyone will go, whoa, and then you'll hear them. Yeah,
so it's like a opa, like because you dropped your cup. No?
Sort of. It's mildly annoying, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're having fun. If they're
exactly.
not.
Exactly, that's
no
what I could tell.
If no one's on fire, you know, and everyone's enjoying good beer, I mean, you can't really complain too much.
Of course. There are a lot of different beer festivals now, though, around the United States and the world. Some of the most obvious examples, the annual ones, are like Oktoberfest and stuff like that. But, of course, I'm referring to Munich, not the one in Fort Wayne. But each one has their own nuance and their own character. But there are a few that have become pretty legendary just in this country alone, I think. They're in their 25th or 30th year now.
Yeah, like the Great Taste of the Midwest.
Great taste.
Yeah, I need to get my ass to
the Portland Brewers Fest, the GABF.
Mm-hmm. What about Brooklyn or New York?
They have a few. They have a few that are been around for 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the most recent one, Get Real New York.
Yeah, that was the first annual a couple months ago.
I heard that went very well.
It did.
Get
it was
real?
A real. Get Real. It's a celebration of real ale.
Okay.
It's held at Randall and Hum.
All right.
So I think a lot of people, what they do now, because it's, you can't really excite people by just saying we're going to have a beer festival and then you get 100 breweries to come in and pour their regular lineup of beers. People won't care. Get Real was a success because they were the only real ale festival of that magnitude. I mean, the Brazenhead has something, but it's not of that scale.
And by real ale, we're referring to cask conditioned ale.
Okay, gotcha.
It's sort of an old method of brewing serving from England.
So. Cask ale. Mm-hmm. So it's like the firkins or...
The beer's alive. Yeah, there's okay. Live. You know, you're consuming some live yeast in the process.
See, distributors have mixed feelings about these fests because in their opinion, like Todd's, like the Real Ale Festival or Todd's Extreme Beer Fest or whatever, they classify as totally pointless because if you can't walk out of the fest as a attendee or let's just say you're a customer or a consumer in their opinion, and purchase the beer that you drank at the fest, in other words, if there's no sale,
mm-hmm.
to follow up what just happened.
You can't sell bottles at a fest, right?
No, what I'm saying is that brewers will make beers for the fest. So it's a one-time deal.
Oh,
so the distributor's like, well, this is stupid because they're going to come out of the fest and they're going to want to purchase the beer that they just had and they can't.
Oh, I see.
So there's no money involved in it. So, but see, that's what I like about it is that we're brewing for the attendee as a one-time deal and we're not doing this so we can follow it up with massive amount of revenue or a windfall in profit. You're doing it because people have come here for a celebration of beer or fermented beverages, mm-hmm. and you put on a performance for them.
So it's simply for extreme creativity, isn't it? Yeah,
of course. For example, for our next Extreme Beer Fest this March, every brewer who wants to attend will have at least 30.
30 beers?
Well, 30 brewers. We'll have over 125 beers.
Okay.
But every brewer who wants to attend will be required to brew... I can't get into it yet. We haven't released it.
Okay.
But they're going to be brewing a beer just for that fest.
Nice. Yeah. So that's pretty unique. So that's special. And, you know, it seems like there's a lot of new beer festivals. And mm-hmm. it seems only natural since the enthusiasm for craft beer is growing still.
Sure, so yeah. And like anything, you have good ones. And you have others who just want to take advantage of the trend. But, you know, there are a lot of good festivals out there.
Well, I can't wait to see what more you do with those. And
for Beast.
What? Okay, more on this to come. How about we regroup next spring and chat more about this, hopefully.
Okay.
You'll have to come back to Brooklyn, please.
Yeah, oh, I'm thinking late March or something.
Yeah, okay, we're thinking
maybe early
late
April.
March.
Yeah.
All right. Back on the show.
Keep your ears out for that. Thank you so much for being on the show. And we'll see you next week on Let's Eat In.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Eat In. Coming up next at 2 o'clock, Pigeon John is live on Snacky Tunes. Be sure to tune in, guys. Also, follow us at HRN Updates on Twitter. See you next week.